This is Morgan Wade, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores and senoritas. This is Chris Shiplett, and you are listening to episode 195 of your favorite podcast, Walking the Floor. What a crazy week it's been. I turned 50. Can you believe that? I turned 50 years old this week. Thank you for all this very sweet, kind birthday wishes and all the funny old photographs that were floating around Twitter. That was good times. And of course, the other kind of bigger news is that Foo Fighters got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. How crazy is that? I don't even know what to think about that. It's just like not even something you even dream of because it's so outlandish, but it's amazing. Lots of great artists going in this year. The Go-Go's, that's pretty cool. Randy Rhoads. We're going in alongside of Randy Rhoads, who's one of my favorite guitar players ever. When I was 12 years old, and I was getting ready to go to junior high, I went to the mall and I got a shirt made that said, Randy Rhoads is God. That's how much Randy Rhoads meant to me growing up and when I first started playing guitar. He's a big reason for why I started playing guitar. So I think I'm going to have to, if we get to play at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony, I'm going to have to sneak like a little snippet of like Crazy Train or Mr. Crowley or Over the Mountain or something. I'm going to sneak something in there. You watch. Stay tuned. All right, let's talk about Zounds.com. Did you know that over at Zounds.com you get free shipping on every single order? No exceptions, no exclusions. And they got three warehouses strategically located all across the United States to get you your gear faster than anyone else. Zounds.com, they're like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame of musical instrument gear online retailers. So get on over there and get yourself something sweet. And we're going to get over to today's interview. All right, Morgan Wade is a young up-and-comer, straight out of small-town Virginia, who just recently put out her debut record called Reckless, which is fantastic. You should go listen to it right now. It was produced by Sadler Vaden, who, it should be noted, did not encourage her to sell out, contrary to what you may have read on Twitter. Anyway, we talk about how she got a record deal to like putting the record together and growing up listening to bluegrass music with her grandpa and how she didn't really start performing live until around college age, I think. And we even had a lengthy discussion about ultra running, so stay tuned for that towards the end. This is Morgan Wade on Walking the Floor. Let's talk about Floyd, Virginia. Anyway, I mean, what was that like? I read that you had grown up kind of surrounded by bluegrass, and that your grandpa was a bluegrass musician.
Yeah. So I, Floyd is, you know, your typical small town, you know, one stoplight, not a lot going on. You know, everything's closed by 8 p.m. and that kind of thing. But on Friday nights, they would have the Floyd Country Store, and that's, you know, where a lot of tourists and stuff will come through and stop there. And on Friday nights, they would have just bluegrass music up there. And so you could pay to get in, but on the streets, these musicians would just get together and just start playing. And yeah, and so, I mean, you know, we'd be out there sometimes, you know, 10:30 at night, just sitting, you know, on my grandpa's lap, listening to music out there. I mean, he's still, I don't know, ever since like COVID and everything, but you know, even until that, he would still go up there every Friday night and just take a chair and just sit out on the street and listen to the music. And it was really cool because it was like, you know, to me, just sitting watching these people that don't know each other just get together and just start playing music and having a really good time. And that, you know, he was really, my grandpa really liked the fiddle. It was like his big thing. And so he bought me a fiddle when I was like 5. And they wanted to sign me up for lessons. And then the first day I get there, and it was actually classical violin. And it was like a Suzuki. I did that for like 2 years. I hated every minute of it.
Yeah, I just wanted to play. This doesn't sound like bluegrass.
No. And I, you know, I just wanted to play the guitar anyways. I just wanted the guitar, you know, and the teacher told my mom, if she doesn't do this, don't get her a guitar. She won't be able to stick with anything. Like, she'll never do anything with it. And then, yeah, she was wrong. But yeah, that was like my first introduction to music, was just growing up sitting there listening to bluegrass.
I mean, so do you have an appreciation, like, was bluegrass your first sort of musical love, or like, does growing up kind of immersed in it in that way, does it sort of make you love it or hate it or what?
I love it. Just, you know, I don't listen to a lot of bluegrass, but it's very nostalgic for me, you know, to hear that. And then, I mean, my grandfather, he's still, you know, I just have this recurring, you know, memory of him riding, you know, in his truck and listening to like a Fox on a Run, you know, just as loud as he possibly could in his car. My grandpa, he had all these bluegrass cassettes. And then I remember, you know, they quit making cassettes and it was all CDs, and he just didn't know what to think about that. And so I guess now that everything's going over to, you know, digital, I'm sure he still has no idea, you know, what's going on, but he just had all these bluegrass CDs, just tons and tons of them. And, you know, I still appreciate it because it, you know, it was good music, you know, it's not the music I play, but, it was, like I said, my first introduction.
It's such a foundation for, and not to say that you're strictly a country musician or anything, but it's such a foundation of country music that I'm always kind of blown away at how many people I interview that was sort of, it's like either bluegrass or singing in church, or so those seem to be the two sort of gateway into country music kind of.
Yeah, musical. For sure.
And so you haven't taught your grandpa how to use the Spotify app on his iPhone yet?
No, we're not gonna. I remember his first like cell phone that got him, it had like a 911 button on it, and he kept hitting it, and it was like every day the cops would show up, so we had to get a new phone. But I'll call him and he'll answer the phone, and it'll take him a few minutes, and he'll be like, "Is this Morgan?" I was like, "We've been talking for a little bit. You didn't, you know." He'll never. But I like the fact that he, you know, uses CDs still. Sure, I mean, come on, you know.
Yeah, that makes me feel old that CDs are now old. You know, CDs were the new thing when I was, you know, whatever. That's another story. you said you started taking lessons, or, you know, fiddle lessons when you were pretty young, but when, like, how old were you when you knew that you were a musician? Like, when that really hit you?
Like, I always knew. Yeah. I mean, I remember being like 7 years old writing songs, you know, and knowing that I really loved that, but it, you know, I just,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my grandma talks about she'll still find little stuff that I had like scribbled down and like hid in like a cookbook or something, hoping nobody would like find it as a kid. And so, but I just was not, it wasn't like something that I was like, you could ever actually do this. Now, I didn't think I could sing. I was like, you cannot sing. Like, I remember in church, I would pretend to sing. I wasn't actually singing. You know, when we had to do the little children's choir stuff, it was like, nope, you sound weird. Something's wrong with your vocal cords. So that was like never a thing at all for me. But I knew it was something I really wanted to do. I just had no confidence to do it. I didn't think it was going to happen, you know? Yeah. And it's, I mean, you know, as a kid too, you know, you know, there was all these like moments that I remember of people being like, no, you can't do that, you know, that kind of thing. And that sticks with you as a kid. And so, you know, that stuck with me for, you know, a long time.
Just overall, like, you can't, I mean, I remember, you know, I went through the same thing of like people going like, well, you're going to work minimum wage for the rest of your life, dummy. What are you doing? that sort of thing. But really with singing, cause you have, I mean, to my ear, I don't know what you sounded like when you were seven, but you have like a strong, powerful, you know, tough sounding voice. Like, why do you think you got that feedback from people around you?
I don't know. And, you know, like kids and stuff too, I would like to say maybe they were jealous. I don't know.
They were jealous. They were jealous.
I mean, that's, you know, that's what I would like to think. I mean, that's like the only thing I can, you know, really think of as to why it would be that way, but it was never, you know, any encouragement from anybody. So I was like, all right, well, that's embarrassing. I'm not, you know, you just shut down and you don't. I just stopped. But I was fine with it because I was like, I'll do this for me. I enjoy it. So, you know, I can sit in my room and play my songs and do whatever for me, and that's okay. And so that's, you know, what I did.
I mean, if you were drawn to it at such a young age and started writing so young, when did you start performing?
So I was 19. It was my freshman year of college, and went through a breakup, and he played music, and so I just got it in my head. I was like, all right, write, you know, I wrote a song about him. I was like, I'm going to form me a little band and I'm going to, you know, piss him off. That was like my goal. And I got on Craigslist, which was not, you know, very safe. And I took two of my other female friends that were like 5'2" over to this house of men that I did not know and went down in their basement and played music with them. You know, I'm fortunate that the story didn't, you know, take another turn. But that was,
You found a whole group of guys on Craigslist. What did they come as, like one Craigslist?
They were like one little, it was just a little set. They were looking for a singer. And, I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, like if I had a child, would never, you know, let them, obviously, I mean, what was my mom going to do? She didn't know clearly, but, that's how that went.
Wait, so if you were started so early and you didn't start performing out till you were like 19 and in college, what were you doing like all through high school? You weren't playing in bands and doing that whole thing?
No, absolutely. No, not. And that's why it was such a shock for like my mom and my dad, you know, like they were like, what? And I'm like, I'm going to go play a show. And they're like, what do you mean you're going to play a show? You know, they knew I played guitar, but it wasn't, you know, just, it was sure. Just something like to them, I guess, you know, like a hobby. It wasn't their fault. I was just right. Like, hey, you know, people told me I couldn't sing. So, I mean, why would you, but you know, my goal was to be a physician's assistant. And, so I was in college and I was going to get that bachelor's and then go on and get my master's. And, you know, that was the plan. And clearly that didn't pan out.
Did you already sort of have it in your mind though, that that's what you really wanted to do was go play music?
Oh yeah, for sure. And then definitely by the time that, you know, like my freshman year that I went and started, I formed that little band on Craigslist. That's when I kind of realized, okay, you could probably do this. At least, you know, I didn't ever, in my mind, it wasn't like, oh, okay, I want to go be on the radio. I want to, you know, I was like, all right, you know, on the weekends, yeah, go play shows, you know. And then little by little, it started to become a little more like, all right, well, I don't really want to like work 9 to 5. I'm definitely not going to be a doctor. So like, let's, you know, I got my bachelor's, but like all throughout college, I was playing shows on the weekends and stuff like that. You know, studied really hard during those times. No clue how I passed, but.
Oh, did you get through school?
Oh yeah, I have a bachelor's degree that, nice. You know, I get to pay the student debt on, but you know, I did it. It was just kind of like at that point, it was like, you know, no one knew because they were still so like, wait, you play mute? Like what? You know, my parents were so like baffled by it that it was just like, what? You know? And, So it was just like all of a sudden I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And, you know, obviously, it's taken a while to get, you know, like to this point clearly, but it's,
So how did you wind up getting in the mix? Like, did you move down to Nashville for a time? I know you live in Virginia now and or still live in Virginia, but where did you like move to Nashville and go do the scene and all that stuff? Or
no, I had been out. I went to Nashville and played some kind of songwriter's night or something out there. And then had some guy claimed he worked for like RCA or so. I don't know. It was a bunch of stuff, you know, trying
I'm
to
gonna make you a star.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. And so it was like, I went and had a meeting with him and it was, you know, we're talking about a dude sitting there in sweatpants and he's drinking lemonade, spilling it all over his shirt. And it was just like, and he was like, yeah, I'm at the RCA building. And he was in an apartment building, like right beside RCA. Just like, I'm still shocked I'm alive. Like after all this, you know, like someone hasn't like murdered me yet, because I'm like, but yeah, that didn't work out. And so after that, I was like, screw that. Like, I'm never going to like Nashville, even though, you know, so I was just that I was playing a festival in Floyd, and Jason Isbell and 400 Unit were playing later that night, and I was playing a set, and the guy that works for them does sound, Kane, he and I didn't know him. This guy comes up to me, he's like, hey, do you have any music or anything I can get? And I'm like, yeah, you know, and he was like, oh, I work for Jason Isbell, like I think these guys would really like to hear it. So I was like, oh, okay, you know. But I didn't expect to hear anything, you know, stuff like that kind of, you know, happens all the time. Like, I know such and such. It's like, okay, sure. Of course you do. Yeah. And, nah, man, it was like two, three days later, I got an email from Sadler Vaden, and, you know, Sadler.
I do know Sadler. And I was wondering if he had warned you before you did this, interview, that when I interviewed him, I think he was my first post-COVID interview, and maybe my very first Zoom interview. And I interviewed him for like, you know, an hour or something, and I forgot to press record. which I immediately figured out when the interview was done. I was like, oh no. And I had that moment like, do I just never bring this up again? Or do I just go like, you know, apologize and ask him to do it again? So I apologized and asked him if he would do it again, and you know, obviously Sadler's such a nice guy that he was like, yeah, no worries, dude, it's fine. But it was like, you know,
it's great that happened, the
least professional podcast moment of my illustrious career.
Well, it couldn't have happened to like a, you know, a kinder person, I guess, you know, because Sadler, okay, yeah.
So that's how you guys wound up connecting, and then what? And then how soon did it go from that to like, I'm going to produce your record?
He just kind of called me and was like, hey, you know, like, I'm, you know, looking to get into producing more stuff. He's like, do you have a producer? And I'm like, no, you know. And so he's like, well, let's like FaceTime one day. He was on tour, and like run over some songs and stuff, throw some songs back and forth. And so we did that, and we clicked pretty quickly. And then he was like, all right, when I get back into town, like, you know, come out to Nashville, like let's work on some stuff. And so we did that, and then it was just, you know, from there it's like, okay, like obviously we want to work together, let's just kind of see where this goes. So we just immediately started like working on songs, and I had never co-written with anybody, nothing like that, you know, growing up. What I did, it was like, wasn't gonna happen, there weren't people around there to do that with. And so, you know, he was kind of helping me out to like navigate that. And we just kind of started recording some demos, no real plan of like what we thought would happen. And then slowly I started meeting people. Like I went and met with William Morris and played them some songs. And so then I got on with the booking agency, and which, you know, obviously they're huge, and that helped with a lot, you know, to get on some shows. And then, you know, I got a manager, and little by little just started connecting these pieces out there, just kind of through word of mouth and like passing those demos around. And then that's when the labels kind of started, you know, trickling in, like having those meetings. And it was 30 Tigers that was, you know, definitely the one that when I sat down with them and met David Macias, you know, he didn't want to change anything. He liked what Sadler and I were doing. And so that's how I knew. He's such a great guy, and they're all, you know, I wasn't worried about putting a record out and it getting shelved, you know, and all that. And so we just started, because originally we thought, all right, we'll put out an EP. We, you know, we didn't really know what we were going to do other than we were just going to write these songs that we really, you know, worked really hard on and put those out and just see what happens. But then it, you know, we went with 30 Tigers. And so, yeah, it's been like working with Sadler for like 2 years on that. And then, you know, like here we are with Reckless. But it was all super organic. You know, it just kind of all just like happened. And like, it wasn't like I was, you know, forcing my way into like, oh God, I got to meet, you know, these guys or anything like that. And I had been a fan, you know, of Jason. And so it was kind of, it was funny because I was just talking to a guy And he was like, I listened to a podcast that you had done back before you met Sadler. It was like a couple weeks before that show. And you were like, they asked you who you're looking forward to watching. I was like, I really want to see Jason Isbell play. Hopefully maybe I'll meet him or something like that. Like, I didn't even remember that. I was like, I had no idea I said that.
It was fate. So then,
yes. So,
I mean, I love the crew over at 30 Tigers. They are a great, great company.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I mean, listening to your record, like, it's a really, it strikes me as like very realized. Like, it sounds more together than most people's debuts. I'm not sure. This is your first record, right? I saw that you had some other tracks up in Spotify, but I didn't know if there was like indie releases that predated it or whatever. But it sounds very realized and like something that like could easily live in major label land. So I didn't know if there was if you had considered going that route or not, you know, which is a very different ball of wax, you know, than what you're probably dealing with at 30 Tigers.
Right. And that was that, you know, I had met with, you know, several different labels. It was just kind of trying to put me in that box instead of just being like, hey, look, like, why don't you let us put out, this is working, this caught your attention, like, you like it, like, why don't you just, like, leave it alone? And so it was, David was just completely like, I'll help you out here, and you guys, you do your thing. And that's what I love so much about all of them over there, is they were just, like, super invested in this project, and like, we love this. And, you know, especially with Sadler, I mean, you can't go, Sadler's such a good guy, too, so. It was just a great process.
Style-wise, I mean, you kind of sit on the bubble between like rock and roll and country and indie rock or whatever. It's. Do you think in the time that we're living in, where there's so much genre overlap and so much sort of fusing of styles, like, does it matter anymore? Like, kind of exactly what lane you get put into, or you're?
I don't think so. Yeah, I really don't think so. And I kind of wanted to put, you know, Sadler and I talked about it. I was like, I want something that's not in any box, you know, just like a blend of like whatever. And I think we did a really good job of doing that, because beforehand, you know, people were like assuming it's just going to be like country. And then they listen to it and they're like, yeah, I really don't know what to put this in. And then, you know, for me, that I like the fact that people are like, I don't know what genre this really is. Like, I can't like place it, because it could be a little of this, it's a little of this, you know, it's so. I was super happy with that. Sadler was happy with that. I was like, that's kind of what we set out to do, you know, is to make something that no one like knew what it was.
Is that him playing guitar on the record too?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening. I hear, you know, I'm old, so I hear 80s, a lot of 80s rock influence in it, like Pat Benatar, The Cars, or, you know, things like that. Were those sorts of 80s bands an influence on you at all?
I'm a 90s baby. So, you know, I'm not going to say I don't know those bands, but I'm not going to lie to you and say, oh yeah, I was super influenced. No.
I feel like I hear some of that's bled into your record. Maybe it's through Sadler.
Well, no, I'm not saying that they didn't have, you know, some of that stuff in mind. I mean, like, sure. You know, and I think too, like, Paul Ebersole was on the record. And of course, you know, he produced Three Doors Down and like Sister Hazel and all that. So I think he does, that brings a lot more of the rock kind of element into that, you know, the early 2000s, late 90s stuff. Yeah. So, and then Sadler's just a Tom Petty dude. You know?
Right. It's in his soul. I know you've talked publicly about your own sobriety. And when I was listening to the lyrics in your song Wilder Days, I was wondering if you sort of frame that as like, are you singing to yourself? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. But it's funny that, because you're like the second person that's brought that up. And I was like, wow, I never thought of it in that way. But I could see how that could go that way, which is pretty cool too.
Right.
But no. I don't... want to remember myself when I drank, what I was like then.
Luckily, I've been sober for a stretch myself, and And I can't actually remember what I was like when I drank.
Yeah, I don't. There's not a lot. Yeah, there's not a lot of. And the stuff I do remember, I'm like, well, I'll just try to balk that one out there. It's not. But sometimes that is good for me because I was like, that's why you don't drink, because you're an ass. So.
You mentioned getting a booking agent. Have you done much touring before all this COVID business?
Yeah, and things were really, really were busy right before COVID hit. And then like all last summer was supposed to be a lot. I can't remember how many dates I was supposed to do with American Aquarium, and love those guys. There were so many shows that, you know, were canceled. But even before that, things were really picking up, and they were slowly getting better too. It was slowly the shows were you know, fun and packed out and stuff like that. But now they're, you know, it's even different too, because I've, you know, went and played a couple shows you know, since the record came out. And it's weird to get back because it's so completely different than what it was, you know, before we went into COVID. It's already changed so much for me, which is cool.
Well, touring can be a tricky part of, or staying sober and touring. Sometimes, you know, oftentimes don't go hand in hand. That's, I think for a lot of musicians, that's a tricky thing. You know, you're out there, you're far away from home, you get that. And I'm just speaking for myself, but I've seen it with plenty of other people too. You know, you're like, oh, I'm no one's going to know, you know, what all those sort of thoughts start to creep into your mind. Like, how do you sort of maintain your sobriety when you're out there traveling and dealing with that?
Man, a big thing for me is like, I try to find a gym, like everywhere we're going to be. I like try to get up that morning, go to the gym, you know, finding like a cool, and it helps me too, to find like, all right, when you go here, you're going to eat at this place, cause this is really cool. And then you're going to hit this coffee shop and like try to like find things, because there's always a cool bar somewhere around there, you know. Hell, half the time it's in your hotel, you know? So it's like, for me, it's good if I'm like, all right, I'm gonna plan ahead and make sure I kind of have a routine and try to, you know, find fun stuff to do. Cause I'm like, there's more for you to do than just go sit at a bar and drink, or just, you know, go sit in the venue. And I take a ton of books on the road with me and stuff like that too. So I can be like, all right, well, if nothing else, you can sit there and read. And, coffee's like my big thing though. I'll just go drink a shit ton of coffee. So,
I mean, that's, I'm kind of, I'm the same way. Like when you said maintaining a routine, that's a big part of it, you know, for me.
Yeah.
And also the workout part, you know, like I always feel like I'm just my whole day is sort of spent trying to grind myself down. So, you know, you're just spent by the end of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
What is ultra running? I've never heard of this.
Yeah. So I came to this little trail town, Damascus, Virginia. And I had played a show here, and the people in this town, I had breakfast with them the next morning before I was leaving, and they had all these shirts on, and there was all this stuff about, you know, this 100-mile race. It's like, what are you talking about? You know, because to me, it had been like a marathon. Like that's the most that I had ever heard of, 26.2 miles, you know. And they're like, oh, these are 100-mile races, you know, put these on here on the trail. And I'm like, what do you mean 100? You know, like, they're like, yeah, people, I was like, people can actually do that. They can run 100 miles at one time. And they're like, oh yeah. And so I was like, I was like, that's stupid. And then like 3 days later, I went out and bought a pair of running shoes. Like, yeah, it just bothered me so bad that there was like this thing out there that like, which is why I can't drink, because it's like something bothering me that bad. Like, I need to do something like that, you know, like what the hell? And
that seems insane. I must do it.
Yeah. Because at first I was like, that's stupid. And then, you know, there we are. Like, I'm like, why are you looking this up? Why are you? And I was like, well, it scares you, so you should probably do it, you know? And, I haven't ran 100 miles yet. I've ran, it was like right after I started looking at these ultra races, I signed up and I did a 6-hour race. Just went and friggin', you just run for 6 hours. And I think I ran like 28 miles. Jesus. The first, and it was like intense. It poured rain. It was like mud. I my feet were like, you couldn't recognize that they were still feet when I was done. And I loved it. It was so weird. Yeah, because yeah, you're sore and you hurt really bad, but it's like this adrenaline rush. And it's like, okay, like
break through the exhaustion or something at a certain point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've never done it. Like I've always wanted to do like a mini Ironman or like something like one of those kind of races, but I've never done it.
Yeah. Then so, but it's so insane because these ultra races too, it's different. You know, you go out and do the 5K or the 10K races and you've got all these people who are just like sprinting and are out there like, you know, super in shape people. You go to these ultra races and it's super intense, you would think, but you've got all these people out there who are, you know, 200 pound people out there running these races, and it's insane, and it's like so much junk food and crap like that, but it's really? A big yes. Oh my gosh, like there's so much junk food. That's like one of the biggest parts coming through those races. And there's so many.
What you would expect. You would think it would be like people that are obsessed with health or something.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm, no. And it's like.
I eat junk food, therefore I want to run for 100 miles. That just doesn't compute.
When during the 6-hour race that I did, I ate like, I don't know, it was 4 or 5 huge, like red velvet cupcakes. I had pizza. I mean, you were just eating all this stuff because you're burning so many calories.
Right.
And so, but the most I've ran so far is a 50 miler, and I've done a couple 50 Ks, which is like 31 miles and stuff like that. And that's I kind of got hurt a little bit after I did the 50 miles. I was just like a little bit kind of had beat my body up. I was doing too much at one time, and so now I'm getting back to start training. I definitely want to do 100 miles this year at some point, but we'll see. Now that I'm on the road and stuff so much, it's kind of like you'll have days that you kind of have to dedicate to running, you know, 30 miles, and it's not like you can just casually go run 30 miles in an hour and
go play a gig.
Go play a gig. So
all right, do promo all day. Yeah. Well, you better stock up on those cupcakes. Yeah. I saw a post on your social media that I wanted to ask you about because I didn't know what it was referring to, and it said, it's nothing bad. I'm just curious. I figured there was something. I figured there was something that happened here. So, and you were responding to it. It said, FYI, I have the freedom to make whatever music I want to make. If there's a change to something, it's because I chose to make that change. No label or team forces me to do anything. I make my own decisions. What was going on there?
Yeah. So it has been like people, the only like other music I have out, I had a record out, more of a demo that I had done years ago. It was basically a way to book shows. I mean, you had to have something, and, there was no producer. There was nothing like that. You know, that was during a time where I was drinking and I don't play those songs anymore. So when that was still floating around out there. And then the only other thing that was out was the night that I had recorded the single with Sadler. And then our vinyl sessions that I had done were just like me and an acoustic guitar.
Right.
So that was all that people had of me. And so then when Reckless dropped, there was some people freaking out because it just wasn't this acoustic music with me and a guitar. I was, you know, it's got too much pop for them. Some people were blaming Sadler, saying he tried to overproduce me, and they were doing the whole, you sold out, you know, all this, because they don't know how that stuff works at all. Like they don't have any idea. And I'm like, you know, 30 Tigers. Yeah. It's a label, but I own my own stuff. So I am my own label.
Yeah.
So
if I sold out, where's my $1 million?
Where's
advance in my labor?
Where is all this at? And so it was people. We pulled the old stuff off because it was like, why doesn't this sound like that? And I'm like, I don't want it to sound like that. That's right. To me. I look back and I'm like, I've grown so much from that. So like looking back on that and hearing that was really hard for me, because I'm like, you know, I don't want to hear that. I want to just move on from that. And it was just so much too. And like the CBS stuff aired on, you know, Saturday. And so now I'm starting to get way more people picking up on like who I am and stuff like that. So it was a lot more the OG fan club, as they are calling themselves, are fighting and bickering with people. So it was just kind of like, listen, like, don't be blaming Sadler or a label or any of this stuff. Like, I'm making my own choices. And
right.
That, you know, that was the thing at my release show that we did out in Nashville. We had two back to back that night, and Sadler played with me, and this group of guys kept hollering out like, don't sell out, don't be a sellout, and just stuff like that. And it was like repeatedly. So I'm like, I don't know what people think, that you just go out there and they're like, you have to do this and this and this, and here's $100 million. Go do what you want, but you're going to, you know, with the money, but we're going to tell you exactly what to do. And it's people talking about stuff they don't know what they're talking about. So that was basically my point.
That's kind of shocking to me that Sadler of all people would be this, the symbol of selling out. Like, I don't know how that quite computes either.
I have no idea.
You said something about something on CBS over the weekend. I missed that. What was that?
Yeah. CBS, Saturday morning.
Oh, did you play?
So, yeah. Oh, so wow, we had taped that. Yeah, and Sadler was on there.
And there was Sadler just overproducing your music on live
television. Overproduced. Well, somebody put out a review and they were like, Reckless by Sadler Vaden featuring Morgan Wade.
Oh, come on.
Like, just trying to, and I'm like, so but honestly, it's funny. And like those, you know, the negative comments are like so small. You know,
right.
The small amount, but it was just like people just being really just pissed off about, we thought this was just going to be you and a guitar. And I'm like, that would be so boring.
Yeah.
Like, never said that. So it was just kind of like, hey, like I run my own stuff. And I think too, like some people just have it in their head that, you know, she's just some young female and she's letting them just boss her around and do whatever. I'm like, nah, it's not how that, well, it's not how that works.
I think you made a great record and you should be proud of it. And thank you.
Oh, for, yeah.
Sitting down and talking to me about it today. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Did you record this or did you?
I remembered. I managed to press record. Let's hope.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, man. Well, have a good one. Thank you.
Right on. You too. Take care. Say hey to those shiplets out there.
I will do that.
All right, that was Morgan Wade on Walking the Floor. Make sure you go check out her debut record, Reckless, out now. I'm not sure when I'm going to be posting another episode. I got a whole lot in the can, but I'm getting ready to go do some more solo recording out in Nashville here, chipping away at a new record or something. So it could be a minute, but be back at it as soon as I can. All right, adios, amigos.